Education Committee. Welcome, committee members, and welcome to those of you in the audience. We have two bills on the docket today, and we'll open with a public hearing on House Bill 2450. Jim, would you read a summary for us?
House Bill 2450 allows a parent receiving temporary assistance for needy families to attend a post-secondary institution full-time as an allowable work activity. Stipulates requirements on assistance and limits the participation to 1% of households receiving assistance. We have a dash four for consideration when we move to a work session.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Kefouri, would you like to lead us off?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Deborah Kefouri, State Representative, House District 43. We've discussed House Bill 2450 in a previous hearing, so I won't go into the details of the bill unless people have questions. I'd like to direct you to the dash four amendments, which are the ones that I'm supporting today. The first part of the amendment, I will let Representative Farr address, since that is his amendment. And the second piece, which begins at the bottom of the first page with section four, the intent of this amendment is to give the department some flexibility due to the uncertainty around our TANF waiver that we have now. And there was some concern that if we lose our TANF waiver, or if it somehow changed dramatically, that this program would be unable to go forward, that since we only meet every other year, there wouldn't be an opportunity for the department to come forward and say, here are the choice. We can still do this program, but here are the choices before you. So this gives them some flexibility in case we do lose our waiver in using this program to help the needy individuals.
Okay. Questions?
I could address the first.
Yes, Representative Farr, please.
To the dashboard amendments, Mr. Chair. The first portion of dashboard amendments is intended to allow a greater realm of flexibility for the people who are involved in TANF to not only go to regular post-high school education, but any trade school or similar school that would allow them to, in effect, be more eligible for a broader range of work. It really doesn't affect them. It doesn't affect the secondary schools. It doesn't affect the regular colleges. And it doesn't draw any money away from programs that are designed to put students into the colleges. I think it's a pretty good amendment, and it really allows, like I said, for a greater realm of flexibility, more freedom and choices of education to further their employability.
Okay. Very good.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to add one quick comment related to the fiscal implications of this bill, and I think that we have a statement that says that the fiscal is indeterminate at this point. We have some documentation that we've delivered to the fiscal office from how the program has worked in Maine, how much it's cost, and also to say that because we put the limitation in the original bill of 1% of all TANF recipients, which is about 185 people, we do not believe that there will be any major. We really believe that since the number of people eligible is very limited, that there will not be a huge flooding at the gates of people wanting to sign up for this.
Okay, so you're saying there will be some limitations and some ceilings that we could count on.
There are limitations in the bill and just in the nature of TANF is not a very large sum of money each month, and if you have a family and you're trying to go to school, I mean, there's a lot of barriers to get to this point. So I don't see that this is going to cost the state any more money than we're spending currently on our TANF. And also, I think if you look at in the long run, because it helps people get out of the system for good, that it will eventually save money. And as I mentioned in our first hearing, we've had so many unpleasant things to talk about this session. It's really nice to have a bill that can make us all feel good and actually help people get on the road to self-sufficiency. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One clarification. This doesn't in any way affect the Arden Opportunity Fund. This is a completely different
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you.
I know the Representative and I have had several conversations over a period of time working. I know she's worked very hard on this to get this to the point where we can deal with it. So I appreciate that. With that, also, we have Anthony Granados. You have signed up to testify.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Anthony Granados, representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. In the Oregon Catholic Conference is the public policy office representing the Catholic bishops in Oregon to serve and promote the common good of the state of Oregon. And we'd like to go on the record today strongly in support of House Bill 2450. We think this is an excellent bill, and it's going to lead to job creation, family wage jobs, and essentially what we are strongly supportive of is bringing people out of poverty. This is an excellent piece of potential legislation, and we ask that you support it. I can't comment on the dash fours. I haven't seen them. We like the bill as it is, as introduced, and so I just want to go on the record and strongly support of House Bill 2450.
Okay. Questions? Well, thank you very much, Anthony. Well, with that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2450.
I'm sorry.
Oh, excuse me. We'll reopen the hearing on House Bill 2450.
I apologize. I just saw the dash fours as I walked in, and apparently there is a mistake in here, so I don't know if you want to conceptually amend or if you want to pull it back, but on page one, lines 9 through 13 are not part of Representative Farr's amendments, nor are they part of mine, and I am not supporting them.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have these read down. I found another mistake. I didn't realize that everything was being combined. I had asked for them to be kept separate. So whichever your pleasure, if you want to pull it back and we can have it redone to make sure it's done correctly.
Yeah, I'm inclined to make sure we do it right. And so we will pull this back and we'll keep working on it.
I'm so sorry about that.
No, thank you for bringing it to our attention. This was the ideal time, just before we got the next step going. So.
Well, I know we all like move this forward, especially me, but I think it's important to do it correctly and get
that
cleaned up.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll get it right. Well, thank you. Well, with that, then, we'll close the public hearing on 2450, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2621.
It was so close.
No, I don't.
Wait, it's good. Somebody saw it.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay.
No.
Do we have amendments on this one?
Yeah, there's just this one little amendment.
Okay, Jim, you want to give us a staff summary, please?
Thank you, sir. House Bill 2621 allows a person adversely affected by rule of a voluntary organization administering interscholastic activities to seek review to determine whether the rule conflicts with state law or rules of state board of education, provides expedited review process, entitles person who sought review of the rule to recover damages and legal fees if rule conflicts with state law or rules of the board. Declares emergency effective on passage. We have one amendment to discuss if we go to our work session.
Okay, thank you. Well, committee, we've heard this bill earlier, and we plan to go to work session today, and we're going to kind of hold off on that. We have two people signed up to testify, Tom Welter and Don Carter.
Chair Backlund and members of the committee, my name is Tom Welter. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon School Activities Association. Thank you for the opportunity to speak again in reference to House Bill 2621. We spoke to you a couple weeks about our concerns of the language of this bill. We think the amendments to the bill, while they are good, we still question the necessity of having this bill at all. As I stated previously, we're an association of 287 public and private high schools across the state of Oregon. Each year, just in transfer students, we process more than 275 transfer cases annually. On top of that, we process over 100 academic hardship waivers for students in our member schools. To my knowledge, the timeliness of making decisions has never been an issue. The OSA is committed to participation of students in the activities that we provide, and certainly when students don't meet the criteria that we have established, they can appeal that, and we try to do that in a very timely manner. The ones that come into our office, we tell our member schools if they haven't heard back from us in 5 days to give us a call. So we try to process those, unless we're out of the office at tournaments or events, we try to process those within 5 days. Certainly the ones that go to our district committee level and then to an eligibility appeals board and then on to the state superintendent, again, we process those in a timely manner because we know that the participation for that particular student is vital, and so we want to render a ruling as quickly as possible. As I stated, I'm not sure that anyone has ever questioned or challenged that we have been negligent in timeliness and processing, so I'm not sure the necessity of House Bill 2621 to deal with that. I don't think that was the original intent of the bill, and I question why the necessity of the bill now focuses on the timeliness issue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Don Carter. I'm the attorney for the Oregon School Activities Association and become involved on behalf of the association in connection with appeals to the second level that are discussed in the bill. That is Part B, which talks about appeals to the State Superintendent of Public Instruction. And I'd like to address that part of the bill because I think it might be informative for you in understanding how these bills arise. These bills are appealed as a contested case under the Oregon Administrative Procedures Act. And as a contested case, the hearings officer conducts a hearing with witnesses under oath. A record is fully developed, and then the appeal from the decision of the state superintendent, adopted after the hearings officer's decision is approved by the state superintendent, is to the Oregon Court of Appeals. So these are cases that anticipate a fully developed record before the hearings officer. And I think the time frames that are set out in this bill are not a concern in most routine cases. But there are those unique legal questions that are presented. And the Portland Adventist case that was discussed last week, last time we were here before you, is one of those cases where to require a decision within 10 days, I think, could result in a bad result and a bad decision for the Court of Appeals to consider. In that particular kind of case, not only is it the State Superintendent of Public Instruction who has to be satisfied with the decision, but the Attorney General of the State of Oregon may be consulted. And in that particular case, that happened, and it did take an extensive time period for that record to be considered, for the difficult legal questions, constitutional questions, to be decided. So I think to treat all of these cases and say that a 10-day provision is appropriate may result in less adequate appeals to the Oregon Court of Appeals. I think allowing the process to take the time that's needed will result in fewer appeals, and those appeals, when taken, can be more efficiently dealt with by the Court of Appeals. I'd like to just contrast a couple of other statutory procedures. Fair Dismissals Appeals Board in Chapter 342 says that decisions there must be rendered within 140 days of the filing of the appeal. The Employee Relations Board must hold a hearing within 30 days, and there is no time period on the decision that must be rendered in connection therewith. In my experience, as the attorney for the Oregon School Activities Association over the last 20-some years, there has never been a concern expressed about how long it takes to schedule the hearing, and only in a very few cases has there been concern expressed about how long it takes to render a decision. The Adventist case is one of those cases, I will admit that. But my experience is consistent with that of Mr. Welter, and that is the organization and the Department of Education, which schedules these hearings, believes that it is most important to get these matters heard as quickly as possible. The State Department of Education has been very has moved very quickly on these cases, and I believe that this is a statute that seeks to solve a problem that does not exist. And it is for that reason that I also speak against this. If you were did believe that it was important to put some time deadlines in there, I'm a bit concerned about a couple of different pieces of this, and I'll just mention them. One of them is business days. As you well know, schools have different business days than regular business. That is, spring break, for example, you won't find school personnel on the school site, perhaps. During summer vacations or Christmas vacations, winter breaks, you won't find school personnel on site. So I would be concerned about the concept of business days in a school context. The other issue is that I would like to just raise is that paragraph 3A says, if an approved voluntary organization adopts a rule that conflicts with state law or rules of the board, a person adversely affected by the rule may seek review of the rule by the voluntary organization. That seems kind of backward, because the State Department of Education has to certify the association every 5 years, and when they do so, they look at the rules and say, we don't think that these rules violate state law or rules of the State Board of Education. But this statute kind of assumes that the rule violation has occurred and then requires a hearing. So I think it's awkwardly structured, and I think it should be considered. I'd like to point out that Randy Harnish of the State Department of Education is here in the room, and to the extent that I have misstated or misinformed you with respect to the position of the State Department of Education, I hope he would take the opportunity to correct me, but I believe that I have expressed the reality of the situation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Tom, perhaps I can direct this question to you. Probably, as I understand it, the genesis of the bill involved that one student who had been declared ineligible. And as I understand it further, you have amended or you have changed your administrative rules to conform with state law. Is that correct?
Representative Bachman, that is correct. After we were informed by the hearings officer that that our decision was in violation of the statute, we have gone back. We immediately amended our rules so that all students in our schools would be eligible on the new ruling. We are now in the process going through our legislative body and our rules-making body that in April we will adopt the final rules that will be published in our handbook for next year that will be in compliance with the ruling that was made last fall. Further to that, we notified all member schools of the ruling and asked them if there were any students in their schools who they had previously thought not eligible to please forward their names to us so that we could review those and review their eligibility. And subsequently, approximately 20 students have been declared eligible after that ruling was made last fall. So we feel like we've acted in a very expedient manner to comply with the ruling that was made and fully intend to comply with all state law and all rules of the Department of Education. Mm-hmm.
So I guess then, to sum up, the reason for this bill being brought forward, or the reasons, plural, you're saying no longer exist. And
well, certainly, Representative Backlund, certainly the student in question was made eligible immediately. In fact, we signed off on that much more quickly than we would have, because she was scheduled to play in a competition on a Saturday. The ruling came out on a Friday, and we signed off on it immediately so that she could participate. And all of, you know, the very issue that spurred all of this has been corrected. That is accurate.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Hobson, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question, but I wanted to say I'm really comfortable with OSAA doing this. I think that their willingness to have already changed their rule to comply. And as I shared with Mr. Welter earlier, I've had a number of athletic directors in my office, and they've never been there telling me how I was doing everything right, and they approved of everything. This man has to try and herd not only at least 198 cats, but they are all very competitive cats, which makes it even more difficult.
Representative, cats to you mean school districts?
No, athletic directors and superintendents.
Okay.
That's all.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Farr.
I've had a chance to respond to a number of athletic directors from around the state, Pasqua athletic directors, and I'll tell you what I told them. In general, I don't believe it's the legislature's business getting involved with the OSAA business. I believe that you guys are a group of professional people with a very strict purpose in mind, and it would be very difficult for me sitting up here to interpret what goes on internally in your organization. And I think I trust that you're doing a good job. I was involved playing sports through high school and never had a bad incident. So what I told the athletic director was, in general, you guys are an organization that I believe is just doing a wonderful job, and keep up the good work.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Committee, you'll note that we had a possible work session scheduled, but I think in view of what we've heard and what we've maybe had a chance to reconsider, we are not going to go to work session. And with that, then, I think we have completed our business for the day. It's kind of like we went swimming and just treaded water, but nonetheless, we'll look forward to 2450 when it's fixed, and we'll go on next week with our business. So with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2621, and we'll adjourn the meeting. Oh, excuse me.
One announcement.
Yes, Representative Farr.
Tomorrow in Eugene, there will be a...